Good afternoon, everybody. Shmuel Plotkin coming at you live from my house. It's Monday. It's March 6th, 2023, and it's book club class time. So let's get right to it. We're continuing our reading of the book, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Volume 1. We're doing this in memory of Rabbi Soloveitchik, who was born 120 years this year, born 1903. So he was born 120 years ago. And we at Gulf Manor Synagogue are 120 plus. And so we have a very, very close, almost the same year birthday-wise. So we're in Rabbi Soloveitchik for all kinds of reasons. Let's get right back to it. We're on page 59. In addition, there were the Rav's annual tshuva lectures delivered under the aegis of the Rabbinical Council of America. 400 people attended the first conclave, which took place on September 21st, 1954. The tshuva lectures were to continue through 1980, and thousands attended each year. Some of these drashot were transcribed and published by Rabbi Pinchas Pelli under the title Al HaTeshuvah in 1974. This volume was subsequently reprinted several times and translated into various languages. There were also the annual Tanya Soloveitchik Memorial Lectures at Yeshiva University, generally dealing with a philosophical theme. These memorial lectures were given from 1968 through 1979. All these public discourses were an American version of the classical rabbinic legal lesson delivered by the master of an academy during the Talmudic period. The Rav also served as the spiritual leader of Congregation Moriah on the Upper West Side of Manhattan from 1950 to 1960. In 1952, Rabbi Soloveitchik began to conduct a weekly Talmudic lecture at the synagogue. What began as a small class for laymen at the shul every Tuesday evening soon became a meeting point for hundreds of rabbis and laypersons from the greater New York area. The congregation was forced to expand its quarters to accommodate the overflow crowds. The Rav taught these classes for some 30 years, even when he was no longer the official rabbi of the synagogue. Rabbi Soloveitchik gave a huge number of lectures to the members of the Rabbinical Council and the Yeshiva University Rabbinical Alumni. The high point of every annual convention and midwinter conference was generally the Rav's lecture. The themes varied and stressed either halachic, philosophical, homiletical, or agadic insights, top of page 60. Many of the lectures were adapted for publication by Abraham Besdin and appeared in two volumes entitled Reflections of the Rav. Hamavaser, the official student publication of the Jewish Studies Divisions of Yeshiva University, also continually printed summaries of the Rav's lectures. Many were collected and published in 1974 by Hamavaser as Shiuri HaRav, a conspectus of the public lectures of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. In August, Yarche Kala seminars were sponsored by the Rabbinical Council at the Maimonides School in Boston. The Rav would elucidate a central theme in four major lectures delivered over a three-day period before the assembled rabbis. These seminars began in 1969 and continued through 1985. During this period, hundreds would attend the Tisha B'Av keynote at the Maimonides School. The Rav would comment on and elucidate the keynote for many hours. Keynote, of course, being kinnis, being dirges, sad poems, prayers, liturgy, psalms, whatever you'll find in the Tisha B'Av prayer book, that's the kinos, various poems and prayers written by great rabbis over the past, some would say, 2,000 years of Jewish history, illuminating the sad events of so many of those years. The Rav would comment on and elucidate the kinos for many hours. During the years when his health was still good, he would begin the kinnis at about 9 a.m. and at times end his comments at 5 in the afternoon. What it meant to be a presence at one of the Rav's lectures was explained by a student. Of course, nothing can substitute for being at the Rav's lectures. The eloquence of expression, the art of sculpturing concrete verbal images in such precise detail that they seem a reality, the soaring poetry of a visionary, the mood evoking magic of an extraordinary storyteller, and finally the ability to fashion a bond of existential fellowship among all those present. And anyone who has heard the Rav speak knows how well he does all these, cannot be captured by the printed word. End quote. Rabbi Soloveitchik's 1972 lecture at the annual convention of the Rabbinical Council was described in the New York Times on June 23, 1972, on page 39. Quote, among Orthodox Jews, he is known simply as the Rav, the rabbi's rabbi. He holds no elective office and occupies no pulpit, yet the breadth of his learning and the depth of his piety is such that his authority on matters of Jewish law is unchallenged. Some say that only a half a dozen scholars have shown such brilliance since Maimonides in the 13th century. Top page 61. His name is Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, and this week his disciples had another chance to sit at his feet in search of learning and inspiration. As he does every year, the 69-year-old scholar addressed his fellow rabbis at the annual meeting of the Rabbinical Council of America, the largest of the country's Orthodox rabbinical organizations. He sat with his feet crossed in front of a table bearing an open volume of the Talmud, a few bulky reference works, and a glass of milk. He spoke in a relaxed, rather informal manner, waving his right hand in the air occasionally to emphasize points and asking frequent questions of members of his audience, many of whom had tape recorders at their side. Quote, I'll take it home and play it for colleagues who weren't able to get here, Senator James Gordon of Oak Park, Michigan. We'll go over and over it maybe three or four times, end quote. Rabbi Soloveitchik's prominence was not accidental. It was a result of considerable exposure to an educated public which sought his guidance. In 1941, a new stage in the Rav's life began with his arrival at Yeshiva and Yeshiva College, which later became Yeshiva University in 1945. Prior to joining the Yeshiva, his intellectual life had primarily been, quote, an epoch of concentration characterized by intensive study and, in a sense, by isolation. The rabbinate in Boston did not generate intellectual greatness and innovative thinking. Once he succeeded his father at the yeshiva, the Rav was animated by the inquisitive minds of his students. The stimulation of the faculty and the general sensibility and awareness created by being in New York, the center of American Orthodoxy. His activities shifted their emphasis, and he gradually became a focal figure in the limelight of American Judaism. The Rav was later to declare in 1956, in my whole life I did not accomplish so much spiritually as I did during these past 15 years at the yeshiva. With all that he achieved at the yeshiva, the Rav was generally harried and hurried while in New York. It was not his home. His time there was limited, and the pressures from within the school and without became increasingly greater. Top page 62. It was only in Boston that he relaxed and could be his true self. There, he was also a pastoral rabbi and engaged in the mundane aspects of Jewish life. The Rav was constantly consulted by his followers for guidance on their personal problems. He constructed eruvim for his devotees so they could carry things out to their backyards on the Shabbos. This was particularly necessary for the Shabbos of Sukkot, when meals were eaten in the Sukkot. Before Pesach, during his initial years in Boston, the Rav visited kindergartens in the Jewish neighborhoods and distributed matzah to the children while explaining its importance on the Passover holiday. He visited the different grades at Maimonides School and engaged the students in dialogues of understanding and explanation in accordance with their age. The Rav also taught in Boston, and every week gave a Sunday morning Talmud class and a Saturday night lecture on the Torah portion. His Saturday night discourse at Maimonides became the focal point of weekly Torah fervor in the greater Boston community. A 1977 magazine article described the phenomena. Quote, "Everyone stands respectfully when Rabbi Joseph Dov Soloveitchik enters the dining hall." By the way, that was also the auditorium, we're told, of the Maimonides School in Brookline, Massachusetts. His Saturday night lectures, free and open to the public, attract large audiences. Members of the local community, yeshiva students, Harvard undergraduates, rabbis, teachers, young and middle-aged couples, and curious outsiders come to experience his Torah lessons. His listeners include members of the Chevra Shas, that is, men who study the Talmud, the group who invited him to Boston in 1932 to be their teacher, and a title rather than a position, their chief rabbi. The long white beard, thick spectacles, and tentative public smile suggest the traditional rabbi. He gave his talks in Yiddish during his early years in Boston, but now he speaks in a flowery academic English with a Yiddish accent, making points with familiar Talmudic gestures. A product of both Jewish and Western scholarship, he uses images from mathematics and physics. He quotes Plato, Aristotle, Kierkegaard, and Kant, as well as the Jewish sages. Top page 63. The Rav, a man of many faces and voices, can be warm, personal, and move his listeners to tears. He can also be aloof, formal, impatient, a little forbidding when he puts down questions that interrupt his train of thought. His voice is deep when he reads from Hebrew or Aramaic texts, and high-pitched, almost a falsetto, when he speaks English. His talks usually begin with a few lines from the Bible, the Psalms, or the prayer book. He develops them like a composer with a musical theme, variations, repetitions, fugues, codas, and cadences presented without concern for the hour or the attention span of his listeners. The Saturday night shiur starts at 9, and they continue until long after midnight. The audience relaxes, dozes, takes notes. An artist sketches as he listens. The Rav provides a spiritual focus for his followers. They say they come to him for, quote, spiritual nourishment, for, quote, recharging, end quote. In the midst of a society which ignores the halacha that governs their lives, they have a need to be in a room full of people who value and respect the same traditions. For them, the Maimonides School, which Rav Soloveitchik created, is a kind of home, end quote. With all that he did, the Rav himself remains essentially a lonely figure, although he was surrounded by many loyal students and devoted associates. He described himself as a shy person and denied that he was an authority in the usual sense of the word. Quote, "I have many pupils, I have many disciples, but I never impose my views on anyone. Judaism is a society of free and independent men and women bound by a single commitment and vision," end quote. He always encouraged his students to develop themselves in accordance with their own unique abilities. Rabbi Soloveitchik held that there was not one mold for everybody. The Rav was a sensitive person with a deep sense of the need for benevolent and sympathetic behavior in accordance with the Torah concept of chesed. It was an elderly Irish Catholic woman who did ironing and other light housework for the Rav's household and for other families in the Roxbury neighborhood of Boston. These tasks helped the woman survive in the era before Social Security and Medicare, when she could no longer work due to the infirmity of old age. Rabbi Soloveitchik personally raised funds and established a pension for her. Another example of the Rav's chesed was his practice of weekly visiting the widow of Rabbi Chaim Heller. Following his Tuesday night lectures at Maria, Rabbi Soloveitchik, accompanied by a few disciples, would bring cheer and recognition to her. A grandson described an incident, top page 64. A grandson described an incident which took place at the cemetery on the eve of Yom Kippur. One year, quote, on the eve of Yom Kippurim, the Rav traveled to the cemetery to visit his wife's grave. He was approached by two non-observant Jews. They did not recognize him, but judged him from appearances to be a rabbi. They asked if he would accompany them to their parents' graves and recite a prayer. The Rav obliged. Their brother was also interred in their cemetery, and they asked the Rav if he would accompany them to his gravesite as well. Again, the Rav graciously complied. Then, declining the repeated offers for remuneration, the Rav wished them well and returned to his waiting car. A cemetery official had witnessed the entire scene. After the Rav's departure, he approached the two beneficiaries and identified the anonymous rabbi. They were stunned that so great a personage, burdened with vast responsibilities, diverted time and energy to address the needs of two unknown, non-observant Jews. 2 weeks later, Maimonides School received a cover letter with a $1,000 contribution enclosed. Quote, please accept our donation in tribute to Rabbi Soloveitchik. We are the two Jews whom he so graciously and affectionately assisted at the cemetery on the eve of his Day of Atonement. End quote. What a beautiful story all around. What an incredible person. He was busy. Here's his genius, totally busy. Erev Yom Kippur, he's got his own things to take care of. For the most part, Briskers never went to cemeteries, I thought. The Rebbe was a little different, I guess, in this regard. And so he's praying there, and lo and behold, two non-religious Jews get a hold of him, and he helps them out. And then they learn who he is, and then they reciprocate by sending a beautiful donation to him. It's a great story all around. Bottom page 64. And because it's the fast day and the whole thing, we're going to just kind of get to the end of the biography part, and we'll do a little bit of the teaching. Yeah, do some of that. Due to his family's tradition of perfectionism, Rabbi Soloveitchik was reluctant to publish during his lifetime. His grandfather, Chaim Brisker, had published nothing during his lifetime. And after his death, his family continued the tradition. Only a single volume of Maimonides appeared, some 17 years after his passing. Since all the Rav's major lectures were delivered from and preserved in manuscripts, he was asked why he published so little. Top page 65. He replied, I am a funny animal. I am a perfectionist. I am never sure something is the best I can do. End quote. For decades, his main published work was a weighty essay, Ish HaHalacha, Halachic Man, which appeared in the first volume of the scholarly Hebrew quarterly Talpiot in 1944. This work, considered his magnum opus, was later translated into English by Lawrence Kaplan as Halachic Man, published JPS 1983. A New York Times article in 1972 attests to the large number of manuscripts in the Rav's possession. Quote, Rabbi Soloveitchik got up and led his guest to a closet in his study. On the right was a four-drawer filing cabinet crammed with yellow folders, each with a handwritten manuscript in English or in Hebrew. On the left was a shelf stacked with scores of tapes. In another room was another storage closet, also filled with manuscripts. End quote. During the last decade or so of his active endeavors, Rabbi Soloveitchik softened somewhat his resistance to publishing his work. Subsequently, many volumes appeared under his name, including some he published and others that were edited from his manuscripts or public discourse. These volumes contained some of the Rav's important halachic and Talmudic insights in accordance with the Brisker method. Among them were the two volumes of Shiurim Lezecher Abba Murray Zal and Sefer Avodat Yom HaKippurim, 1986, Kovetz Chidushei Torah, and Chidushei HaGram VaHagrid. So who's the Gram? That's the Gaon Rabbeinu Moshe, meaning Rabbeinu Moshe Soloveitchik, his father. And who's the Grid? The Grid was himself. the Gaon Rabbeinu Yosef Dov. That's the grid. That was published in 1993. Volumes of Halachic and Talmudical Insight. During this period, the Rav also continued to publish major philosophical works. The Lonely Man of Faith appeared in the summer 1965 issue of Tradition. He dedicated this study to his wife, who was then ill. The moving dedication read, "To Tanya, a woman of great courage, sublime dignity, total commitment, and uncompromising truthfulness." The Tishrei 5739 issue of Hadarom, published in September 78, but the copy of Hadarom, published by the Rabbinical Council of America, was dedicated to the memory of Tanya Soloveitchik. The main entry was the Rav's Uvikashta Misham, an essay called "But From There You Shall Seek," which was to take its place alongside the Rav's Halachic Man as a prime expression of his philosophical thought, top page 66. An entire issue of Tradition was devoted to five of the Rav's public lectures, and that issue is in spring of 1978. Included were talks he gave at MIT, Penn, Rutgers, the Conference of Jewish Communal Services in Boston, and his eulogy for the Rebbetzin of Talna, Rebecca Torsky, the mother of the Rav's eldest son-in-law, Rabbi Isidore Torsky. Rabbi Isidore Torsky lived from 1930 to 1997, passed at the age of 67 years old, head of the Judaic Department at Harvard. The final years of Rabbi Soloveitchik's life were spent at his daughter's home in Brookline, Massachusetts, as ill health precluded his continued participation in public undertakings. Death came on Chol HaMoed Pesach, the 18th of Nisan, 5753, on April 8th, 1993. Although it was in the middle of the Passover festival, the news of his passing spread quickly. He was deeply mourned by his students and devotees in North America, Israel, and throughout the Jewish world. The Rav and his wife were blessed with three children. The eldest, Dr. Atira Torsky, is chairperson of the school committee of the Maimonides School, thus continuing the tradition established by her mother. Dr. Tova Lichtenstein resides in Jerusalem and teaches at Bar Ilan University's School of Social Work. The youngest, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, is professor of Jewish history at the Bernard Revel Graduate School of Yeshiva University. And then comes footnotes. There's quite a bit of them. I'll read one or two here and there. I'll read some right now. Remember we spoke about how earlier he was the rabbi of the Moriah Synagogue, Congregation Moriah. Here's a footnote. At Congregation Moriah, the Rav was assisted by his brother, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, who later became its spiritual head. After Rabbi Aaron moved to Chicago in 1966, Rabbi Yosef Weiss became a spiritual leader of Moriah. The latter, a prominent disciple of Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, was also a yeshiva faculty member. I remember seeing pictures of him on the Yeshiva University REITs, you know, these photos of the Rosh Yeshiva, some of the students, whatever. And the picture of Rabbi Yosef Weiss was very intimidating. Long white beard, very stern look, very stern. Congregation Moriah was located in the heart of Manhattan's hurried, constant activity. The entrance was on 80th Street, corner of Broadway, one flight up in a two-story building. Part of the level was rented to the congregation, while the rest housed a commercial music school. I have no knowledge of that little place. I'm not sure if it was around even when I was coming up. I was not a native Upper West Sider. I knew my way around the Upper West Side, shul-wise, restaurant-wise, and so on, but there had to be a shul here and a shul there, in this vinkula and that vinkula, everywhere you go on the Upper West Side. It's amazing. It was always fun to discover another shul. Visiting this one, visiting that one, going to this shul or that shul. Wow, what a shul around here. It was very nice. There was a talk that he once gave at YU called Kavod Kaved, Why I Identify with Yeshiva University. I have to get my hands on that. Here's something interesting. In a letter to the author, dated June 26th of 1996, Rabbi Israel Lerner, president of the Hebrew Club of Yeshiva College, during the 1942-43 school year described the initial presentation of the ideas developed in his work Ish HaHalacha, which later became known as Halachic Man. Quote, the genesis of Ish HaHalacha was in the Hebrew Club of Yeshiva College in 1942. The Rav accepted our invitation to talk in Hebrew on a topic of his choosing. He chose this topic, spoke in flawless Ashkenazic Hebrew, and had a distinguished faculty group in the audience in addition to students. The lecture was later expanded into its written form. How about that? Then comes a bibliography, the biography of Rav Soloveitchik. Then comes a listing of the selected chronological bibliography of the published writings of Rav Soloveitchik. And then comes an index, the biography of the Rav, where if all you want to do is just find something in his biography, is an index for that. And then, of course, on page 111 starts the portraits of the Rav, a pictorial chronology. Starts up very young, by 1940, he's newly admitted to the United States, and there, 13 years later, he's speaking at Yeshiva University with a little goatee, a mustache and a goatee. And then pictures in the 1950s, mid-1960s, 74, mid-70s, and more mid-70s, and then more mid-70s, and then the late 70s, and then picture of him in about 79, picture 1980, picture in 1982. And now, insights. Now we'll get to some of the teachings of Rav Soloveitchik, and they start on page 133. Lithuanian Lore 1.01, Rabbi Yaakov Pollack, related by the Rav in a Mishnah Shir on the Yortzeit of HaRabbanit Tanya Soloveitchik, Yeshiva University, March 11, 1968. The Mishnah states in Brachos chapter 5, Mishnah 2, Havdalah, which is the blessing recited at the conclusion of Shabbos or a festival. Havdalah is recited as part of the more general blessing of Atachonein La'adam Das, that was favored us with knowledge. Rabbi Akiva says the Havdalah is recited as a fourth blessing. So it doesn't take part in the fourth blessing. It is its own blessing. Seems that it's going to wipe out Atachonein. There is a famous ruling by Rabbi Yaakov Pollack, born 1460 or 1470 and passed after 1522. That on Saturday night, you do not begin the fourth blessing in the usual fashion with Atachonein La'adam Das. You are fashioned men with wisdom, with knowledge. Instead, you start with the words of the Havdalah. You have favored us with the knowledge of thy Torah. Rabbi Yaakov Pollack was the Rebbe of Rabbi Sholem Shachner, who was born in 1510, lived about 1558, who in turn was himself the Rebbe of the Ramah, famous Rabbi Moshe Isselis, born 1525 or so, 1530, till about the year 1572, and the Marshal, Rav Shlomo Luria, about 1510 to roughly 1574. It was Rabbi Yaakov Pollack who brought Torah to Poland. He was the first advanced teacher of Torah in Poland. In essence, he belonged to the school which continued the method of study developed by the Bali Tosis of Germany and France from the 12th to 14th centuries. Not a direct continuation, mind you. The death and persecution engendered by the Black Plague created a complete break in the tradition of Ashkenazi Torah scholarship. Page 134 at the top. First came the Crusades and then the Black Plague. The latter in particular interrupted the continuation of the Baalei Tosfos. But then the Maharil, Rabbi Yaakov Moellin, born about 1360, passed away in 1427, and the author of the Trumas HaDeshen, who, Rabbi Israel Ishmaelin, born 1390, passed 1460, somehow reestablished the study method of the Baalei Tosfos. Rabbi Yaakov Pollack was a member of this reorganized school. Rabbi Yaakov Pollack was harassed by his senior rabbinical colleagues over a lenient ruling he issued, which permitted miud, a minor bride's rejection of her husband. As a result, he had to leave Germany. Moving to Poland, he settled in Krakow, where he opened the first yeshiva in Poland. Rabbi Yaakov Pollack was thus responsible for the later flourishing of Poland as a center of Torah learning. The Ramah, the Marshal, and the Maharam Lublin all followed his method of study. Later, the Bach, Rabbi Joel Sirkis, author of the Bach, the Bayit Chadash, and the Taz, Rabbi Ben Shmuel, author of the Taz of Tzurei Zav, and the Shach, of Shabtai Ben Meir, known as the Taz, the Tzurei Zahav, and the Shach, author of the Shach of Shabtai Ben Meir, author of the Shach, the Sifsei Cohen, continued this method. Rabbi Yaakov Pollock was ultimately the teacher of all these great Torah luminaries, and thus the father of Torah in Poland. Despite this great accomplishment on his part, we possess no volumes of Torah scholarship by Rabbi Yaakov Pollock. Indeed, we have no published works either from him or from his son, Yerushalmi Shachter. I once heard from my father in the name of Rav Chaim the following report regarding Rabbi Yaakov Pollock. Please remember that Rav Chaim Brisker was very careful in transmitting such reports. Rav Chaim heard from his father, Rabbi Yosef Baer, that's the base of Yosef, base of lady, in the name of Chaim Belarziner, Rav Yaakov Pollock, and Rav Shalom Shachner did not author any volumes because they felt that the prohibition that, quote, words transmitted orally you are not at liberty to recite from writing, Gemara in Gittin 60b, was still applicable in their own time. You can't distill to a writing anything that's an oral tradition. Accordingly, we may only record those teachings that are absolutely essential to Torah study and halachic decision-making. This is the maximum permitted by the verse which declared, when it is a time to work for God, they have made void thy law. Heferu Torah Secha. Eis lasus Lashem. Heferu Torah Secha. It's a time to do for God. They have upended your law. That's Psalm 119, verse 126, upon which the sages based their partial cancellation of the prohibition to record such teachings. In other words, the rabbi said, listen, there is a pasuk that governs when we're living right now, that governs our reality. Our reality is we're losing stuff, we're forgetting things. So you have to distill it to a writing. Well, we have a pasuk for that. Eis lasus Lashem. It's time to do for God. Heferu Torah Secha. They're upending your Torah, meaning if we don't do something about it now, people are going to forget the Torah. So therefore, normally people begin to write things down. An arrogant person thinks that people cannot get along without his writings, and so he authors volumes. However, a really modest and humble person does not think that his writings are indispensable. Since his volumes are not indispensable for the survival of Torah, he is not permitted to write down his rulings and teaching. That's why Rabbi Yaakov Pollock, the personification of humility according to tradition, and Rav Shalom Shachner did not publish anything. Nevertheless, my father reported five rulings by Rabbi Yaakov Pollock. These rulings were never written down. They cannot be found in any history book. One of these five rulings is that on Saturday night, one must begin the fourth blessing with the words of the Havdalah. Of course, we have not accepted this viewpoint. However, there are many Achronim who agree with Rabbi Yaakov Pollock. So even though we don't follow his ruling, and instead we do the Shemoneh Esrei, opening up with Atachone and Adam Das, still in all, his opinion is weighty, and to be considered, we may not posture like that, but still in all, a very learned opinion. That's been all I have to you today. God's help, we'll get back together next week, next Monday, at 1 o'clock, and we'll continue Lithuanian lore. We'll see learning by moonlight, rabbinical poverty, Vilna's righteous convert, the Vilna Gaon's wife, debate in silence, and so many other things. Wishing everybody a great day. Have an easy fasting. Have a joyous Purim tonight and tomorrow, and a joyous Shushan Purim as well. I'm not sure we're going to be able to give our Tanakh class tomorrow night at 7:30. My shul's having a Seuda. It's going to overlap a little bit with it. There's going to be some dessert and dancing, and then we're going to have Marav. So everything's just going to be completely conflicting with each other. Even if we, you know, with the class at 7:30, there's going to be a Marav need, right, smack into the class. And what if people don't want to show up because it's, you know, the evening of the dinner at the shul plus the dancing and the dessert? It's going to be a balagan in a good thing, a good way. So we'll have no class this coming Tuesday, tomorrow night. We'll meet again Wednesday morning, Shushan Purim. All the best, and dedicating this year to the memory of Bill Ziv, Ziv Shmuel Ben Yisrael. May his Hashem have an aliyah. Take care, everyone. Everybody have a joyous Purim tonight and tomorrow. All the best. Have a